The suspect was carrying a fraudulent airway bill as he approached the warehouse. The airway bill is for a legitimate shipment of seafood that was picked up the day before. Once inside the warehouse, the suspect provided it to Air Canada cargo warehouse attendant. A short time later, a forklift arrived with a container of gold and foreign currency and loaded it into the rear of the suspect's truck.
A year ago today, yeah, that's what happened. Someone showed up with a bill saying, hey, I got some seafood to drop off, and no one smelled anything and no one saw anything odd. And they said, okay, put it in that room over there. And guy shows up with a forklift and takes out 6,600 bars of gold, $23 million worth of gold. That's a year ago today. And everyone wondering, well, how the heck did this happen? Everyone said, well, it had to be an inside job. Well, we're learning a lot of details today, and certainly that is that we have, you know, cross-border policing. United States police, FBI, Department of Justice working with Peel Police, certainly. Numerous levels of policing on this. Several jurisdictions where they were able to track down, arrest 9 people. 3 warrants are active for 3 others wanted. They confiscated 65 guns said to have been coming over the border. And again, with all these charges and the seriousness of this, because this is the 6th largest gold heist in Canadian history, but it's the biggest in this country. And then, of course, we hear at the very end of the press conference that all of the accused are on bail, which at that point I fell off my seat and got back up on it. Let's bring in Hank Asinga, who certainly you would know from Homicide. He is with us here at the 640 Toronto Newsroom. Great to have you, Hank.
Hi, good morning, Alex. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
What do you make of this? It's not every day we get to talk about this, but it's also not a small thing.
It's an amazing story, and they've given us a good insight into a little bit of the investigation. I think there's a lot more to come. There's certainly some proceeds of crime investigations to come after the fact, and some more people to be arrested, I'm sure. Quite a story. Obviously, Peel had their eyes on the right guys. They had them flagged on some computer systems. And when their driver got pulled over in Pennsylvania, he had 65 guns with him. You know, as the chair of the board there said repeatedly, this is what the proceeds turn into, is to firearms, and it affects public safety. So although it's a property-only offense, technically, to your point about bail, is that something that should be considered where the proceeds of these crimes go to?
Yeah, let me pick your brain on a couple of these different things, because it was the pulling over the driver in the United States, I think, that really kind of blew the doors open on this. But there would have, I think, been some conversation. So how would that have gone down? Is it that Department of Justice calls Canada and says, here's the situation we've got? Or would they have known about this? Would there have been alerts issued between, you know, how would that have worked that they were able to connect that driver to this particular issue?
Yeah, I think the Peel investigators were pretty clear. They had identified him prior to that traffic stop. They would have had him flagged on computer systems. And the ATF folks said he was illegally in the United States. So while Peel were looking for him, he was south of the border. And when he got pulled over in Pennsylvania by that state trooper, he would have been run on some databases, and the alert would have come up that Peel is interested in this guy. And communications would have been made between Pennsylvania State Police and the ATF and Peel Police to dig into why the interest. Now, it looks like there's no direct link yet between those firearms and the theft from the airport, but I'm sure that's where some of the proceeds went to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, it was made clear, a couple of things made clear, and the reporters asked, was this an inside job? And obviously with the arrest of 2 people with a connection to the airport, they'll be, you know, that says, I think, a lot of what we need to know. But there are so many issues coming off of this story as to what then does Air Canada have to do internally. You know, they've got a bit of a trust issue that they're going to have to deal with, because this shouldn't have happened, right? Like, it's just crazy how this happened, but it did. And so are they vulnerable to it happening again? What would they need to do? And the airport in general, you know, given the climate we're in now, it was gold then, but it could be something else next time.
Well, we're certainly seeing the civil suit. I believe Briggs is suing Air Canada for lax security measures. And we see this time and time again, Alex, issues at the airport with, minimum wage employees who are responsible for handling things like luggage and warehouses. And they have the inside knowledge on how to beat those systems. And that's exactly what they've done here. I don't know if the answer is to increase the wages there. I think a lot of people would be tempted by that opportunity at $20 million, but it's an ongoing problem. And they have to have the highest level of security there that they can possibly muster. And a fake way bill, mm-hmm. even though it was an edited copy of a legitimate way bill, that's something that should still be caught in the day and age of barcodes and scanners and whatnot.
Yeah, you would think about that. The other thing, the guns they got off the streets, but it's a game of whack-a-mole because it was made clear also in this press conference, and I've talked about it certainly a lot on this show, is the organized crime in this country. And it's been written about certainly since Sam Cooper wrote his book, Willful Blindness, the trafficking and the money laundering going through the BC casinos and the amount of drugs flowing in and all the rest of it going across the country. We've been warned for a couple of decades now that this is going on. It seems to have metastasized during the pandemic, but it's seemingly out of control. And the thing is, the cops can do all they want, right? They can go after all these car thefts and, these rings, but it's a game of whack-a-mole until we get really serious with a strategy on this.
I think it's a really all-encompassing necessity to get everyone involved, from the federal government to the legislation to the criminal code. The police are out there doing great work day in and day out, and they get as frustrated as you and I get seeing these arrests being made. 30 years ago, theft over $5,000, you wouldn't be getting out on bail, more than likely. And nowadays, even some friends of mine who are justices of the peace are very frustrated with the case law and the legislation that they have to deal with, and essentially are forced to release people like this.
I don't get it, though. I don't get it. Like, I don't understand. And I covered enough of these bail hearings to know who can be kept in and who can't. But just if this can't keep you in, and I keep saying, if this case can't keep you in, what will? I mean, you're talking about 65 guns being trafficked. We're talking about $22 million bucks. If this can't even keep someone in jail on refused bail, I don't know what will anymore. The system's broken. Mayor Brown talked about it. A couple of the police officer chiefs talked about it. We all know what's going on. And yet, Hank, they've done nothing to change it. They've done nothing to change what police chiefs across this country and certainly premiers asked for over a year ago.
Well, if they can make a direct nexus between the theft of the gold and the importing of the firearms, and lay charges appropriate to that, I'd probably argue that they wouldn't get bail. But if they can only suppose that there's a nexus there, then it's not something the prosecutor is going to be able to use at a bail hearing. So they've got to do some more digging, like I said, make that direct connection. And if they can do that, then you might see more charges laid and some bails denied in that case. But I agree with you. You would think theft over, it's not just theft over $5,000. Yeah. It's theft over $20 million. Mm-hmm. And what are the repercussions right now? It'll be interesting to see where this court case goes.
Yeah, it would be really interesting. And again, we need an overhaul, I know that, of the system, but certainly we've got to deal with the organized crime. Maybe that will then keep people, automatic denial of bail if you get caught and there's a link to organized crime. But we got to do something, because I have to think that the guy there from the Department of Justice must have just been like, what are you talking about? What is going on in this country? What's wrong with you, Canada?
Sadly, the punishment I've seen time and time again for participating in a criminal organization, and there's a national charge for that, tends to be a peace bond. You're on probation, don't associate with these people you've been associating with ever again.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And that's it, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be very well behaved. Nonetheless, All right, Hank, we'll see what happens, but I appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
A pleasure, Alex. Thanks very much.
Hank Asinga joining us with a bit of a back, kind of fly-on-the-wall view of how this goes down and happens. We're trying to get Mayor Patrick Brown on for end of the show. It is a big talker. There are a lot of prongs you can go off on this, but, a few questions that are outstanding still is, what are our airlines doing to make sure that seafood deliveries are just that? Because this time it was gold. What happens next time if it's like bombs, right? Like, we got a big problem. A second. the bail, which I just went off on, the guns coming across. There are so many elements of this.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.